I'm Vermont Edition co-host Bob Kinzel. Just wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. When it comes to providing school lunches and sometimes breakfasts and other food, public schools have it down to the cent, trying to provide nutritious and appealing food on a very tight budget. But they also have to keep up with the dietary restrictions and allergies of their student population. So without catering to every single food preference, how do they manage to ensure that students are healthy and fed? Even if students don't choose the school food option, there have to be rules in place to make sure that students with severe food allergies are not exposed to something that could kill them. Many parents and students are familiar with bans on tree nuts in school and daycare settings, but some places go further, and for families where an allergy is present, this is potentially life-saving as a measure. But taken too far, parents of children without allergies might feel like they're working with unnecessarily limited options. They could revolt and send contraband items in with their kids, thinking, come on, this has just gone too far. So what's appropriate, and how do schools manage? We're joined today by an experienced school nurse, Sharon Lee Treffrey, who's now the school nurse consultant for the state of Vermont. She knows a whole lot about this issue. Sharon Lee, thanks very much for joining us.
You're very welcome. It's a pleasure to be here.
So is this something that that all schools have to think about every year, is a policy about foods? And, you know, it goes beyond foods, too, to other issues in other areas where kids might have allergies. But is this something that's top of mind for school administrators?
It is. Every school administrator wants to know that they can feel confident that their team and their school personnel can respond to meet the needs of these students and to respond if something should happen. Because every parent wants to be able to send their child to school knowing that their child will be safe and then cared for in state of an emergency.
Are there statewide guidelines? I know certain states, certain provinces in Canada have guidelines and others don't, and it's sort of up to the school district. What is it in Vermont?
Well, every school district sets their own policies, but when it comes to food allergies, when it comes to allergies specifically, there is legislation that requires or allows schools to have a protocol for emergency medications, and stock epinephrine is one of them. So that allows school physicians, if there is one, to write a prescription for stock epinephrine. It allows a pharmacist to dispense a prescription for the whole school for a stock.
In other words, I might not be sending my child with an EpiPen, but if my child has an allergic reaction on school campus, the nurse or the physician is allowed to use it on my kid, even though it's not prescribed for that child individually.
Mm-hmm. And that would be the part of the allergy management team would be to be sure that the right number of people. A school nurse can't be everywhere. There are schools that don't have a school nurse every day. So you want to have a system that it refreshes that prescription every year, reviews, does a walkthrough with the team to know how to respond, to know where it is, to know ideally they're not kept locked. And that involves several people in the team, the nutrition team, the administrators, and a designee who would cover when a school nurse is not available.
Do most schools have a tree nut ban, so peanuts and other nuts that, you know, you often think about when we think about food allergies in kids?
So schools don't need to have a ban until there's a known allergen, a student or an individual that could be a staff person with a known allergen. And so having a protocol for a known allergen is a little different than having a stock epinephrine available.
So schools don't have to have a plan, but do they? I mean, my daycare, for example, has a tree nut ban, and I think that is sort of an across-the-board ban all the time so that they're not trying to figure out who has an allergy this year or not. Mm-hmm.
So you're bringing up a good point. You're talking about daycare. So the developmental issues are really important for a school nurse who's ideally leading this team to set up an allergy management system, is to address if you're just dealing with a high school and everybody is competent to follow the system, you have a little bit different rules.
So it really does have a difference depending on how much the children themselves or the students themselves mm-hmm. can participate in their own policing of what they're eating. Mm-hmm. So again, I mean, it sounds like there aren't numbers because I keep asking you, you know, who has a ban? And it doesn't sound like there are numbers that are kept on which schools have a ban on, for example, tree nuts.
No, there's not a database for that.
But often it will be an elementary school that makes a ban and a high school that just reminds people.
Well, I think if we focus on the preschool, first grade, younger levels, it's reasonable to assume that there may be a ban because you don't know who is coming in. But the bans typically are centered around a situation that you know of. So a parent who has a child with an allergy, so the first thing that they would want to do is to have that confirmed by the physician. And maybe they had that diagnosis made when the child was 4 or 10, but now the child is 15. So it's important to stay in touch with the medical home, the medical provider, and to reassess that allergy. Do they need further testing? Do they need to confirm that this allergy still exists? So that's really the first step. And then a parent would check the school handbook for looking for any nut-free policies or protocols. And then there are some forms that are available that work ideally for a student with a known allergy. So those are available online. And the way those materials are made available is the School Nurse Advisory Committee maintains the standards of practice, scope and standard of practice of school health services for Vermont. So that means that there are school nurses. That means that there's somebody from the Agency of Education. So we vet all the content and prepare various recommended or sample forms. But then we use content experts. So American Academy of Pediatrics, Vermont chapter, and the American Academy of Asthma, Allergy, and Immunology. We have a specialist who vets the content. So staying on top of all of what's happening nationally and what are the best clinical guidelines. And from there, the content that is online has been set up.
It's not just peanuts and other nuts. What are some other common allergies that we find in the school-age population?
Yeah. So there's 8 kind of big ones, and milk and egg and shellfish are the more prominent ones. Latex is not a food allergy, but it is can be a significant allergy. But so tree nuts, soy, fish, and sesame and wheat have been known to cause an anaphylactic reaction.
So has that impacted school lunch programs and what they serve and how they come up with menu items for public schools in Vermont?
So I think in recent years it has, but the food nutrition program has always had to accommodate because it's for all students. So it's had to accommodate any nutrition needs that have been documented, medically documented, that would affect their access to education. So that's always been in place. It's the same for food allergies and any other health conditions. Schools have always, in Vermont, been able to respond to that. The nice thing about the legislation is that it prompted the State Board of Education to request a standard to establish the policy. And then to request a standard set of protocols. So now all schools can use the same protocols, and they're available online.
Does it go beyond allergies? Do schools think about other dietary concerns, whether it's a religious situation? So do schools keep kosher or have halal offerings? You know, does it go for students who are vegan? You know, are there options for students depending on what their family structure or their religious mm-hmm. background is as well?
There are. Winooski is a good example of that. They have halal offerings. When it is specifically relates to health, though, that's when it needs a medical provider to evaluate the student and confirm what the needs are. And sorting out the difference between an allergy, which is very just as important to manage as those who have an intolerance for different products, so gluten and other items. there are ways to work around different food options. So, yes, schools do accommodate that.
Irv is calling in from Norwich. Hi, Irv. Go right ahead.
Thank you. I'm a grandparent of children with serious food problems, and I want people to know about a resource, online resource, called Freedible, FreeDible.com. It's a place where people can exchange recipes that avoid any of the particular big eight and some more obscure allergies, too. Celiac and peanut problems. Celiac is gluten hypersensitivity. They're lifelong, and they can be life-threatening. I also wanted to comment on bullying. I know that the dairy industry objects to anything that doesn't come out of a cow or maybe from a goat being called milk. But children get bullied if they can't have milk. And it's a saving grace for those kids that you can serve them something like almond milk or soy milk or whatever milk. I don't think consumers seriously believe that soy milk came from a cow, and I don't see the harm to the dairy industry in calling those things milk. I think it's a mercy to the kids.
Let me ask you about that, and we'll leave the debate about what can be called milk and what the dairy industry wants to the side. But you mentioned that some kids who can't drink cow's milk or goat's milk, you say they get bullied. Is that something your grandchildren have experienced or something that you've heard about happening to people?
I believe one of my grandchildren has been bullied. This is not in Vermont. It's down in Connecticut. About milk. Yeah.
Irv, thanks for sharing your perspective. I appreciate that and the resources. And Sharon Lee Treffery, I want to ask you about that question of bullying, because one of the ways that, at least in the past, schools have come up with how to make sure that students who have severe allergies are protected is to have them isolated. So they eat somewhere else so that they're not exposed to a potential allergen. And that isolation sets that kid apart. So, you know, Irv is saying also he's heard of his grandchildren being bullied because they can't eat, they can't drink what the other kids are eating. Do you find that happens in schools?
That does happen. And it might be a child with cystic fibrosis who is drinking whole milk. And if the other kids realize that that child is drinking that and they're all drinking 2% or whatever, that's another reason for, oh, you're going to get fat, and mislabeling, misinformation. So it really comes from the culture of the school setting a respectful environment where individuals can discuss problems. And that really comes from the top, systemically across the school. Ideally, if the school treats all challenges that way, that's really helpful. When it comes to allergies per se, again, I'll point to the developmental piece. So if you have specific cognitive limitations or mobility issues, then maybe you have a structure that's a little bit firmer. But once you have a student who can advocate for themselves, understands their condition, knows what to eat and what not to eat, and the family and the teacher and the school nurse understands this isn't going to be a student that's going to challenge themselves. We've had kids do that as well. So it's part of that getting to know the family, knowing the student really well. A school nurse would make an assessment of the family and the student and all of the needs to guide the team so that they can best meet those needs. But in terms of bullying, it's really important to be recognized and to be recognized right away, immediately. It certainly can be life-threatening. But providing alternatives, planning ahead. So if a teacher's having an event in the classroom, plan ahead, let families know. If a student moves into the community in November and all of a sudden this student has a severe peanut allergy, just being able to go to their file and say, this is, or their online, their website that lists, these are alternative snacks. We are going to have to pay attention to this alternative list more often. And maybe they don't celebrate peanuts in November. Maybe they celebrate something with some other foods that everyone can eat.
So, I mean, do notes go to home to parents, too, that say, you know, I know that your child has a birthday mm-hmm. in February and you really want to send cupcakes, but, you know, we're not doing wheat in this classroom.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But there must be pushback from parents who say, come on.
Sure, absolutely. especially when we know, and we all know our kids have favorite things that they prefer, and to be told that you can't have it, or it's an inexpensive option, and all of a sudden you're told you can't, you have to pay for something more expensive. So that goes beyond the food item. It's, well, maybe are there stickers? Are there other ways to celebrate an event that don't involve food or that don't involve costly accommodations?
Or that don't involve excess sugar.
Right. Well, of course, in the health department.
Today we're taking a look at how schools accommodate all the different types of allergies their young charges have. It's tricky. Allergies, some very serious, have been on the rise. But schools have really tight budgets when it comes to school lunches. And they have to get parents and other kids on board to have something like a tree nut ban actually work. Sharon Lee Treffery was a school nurse for many, many years, and she's the school nurse consultant for the state of Vermont. Debbie is calling in from Norwich. Hi, Debbie. Go right ahead.
Hi. So I have a 15-year-old now who has a very severe peanut allergy, and I've also worked in the school system as a nutritionist, so I understand that this balance is something that each school has to decide on their own. I have to say, in the beginning, I wanted him to be in a bubble. I wanted that bubble to occur at the school. And what I've grown to know is that I want him to, even in the school situation, to reflect life as it is at whole, so that he learns how to get along with ambient exposure if it's at a separate table, for instance. And it is awkward in the beginning, and it is something that I can see that kids do get bullied. But if you just stick with it and always be their advocate, I find that it's easier. And I actually have to say that having the peanut allergy made my life so much easier because I didn't allow him to eat the bad food that was in the school cafeteria.
Debbie, let me ask you, you know, you say that with your son, as he got older, you helped him sort of learn how to manage his allergy on his own, which, you know, developmentally makes sense as well, because, you know, as you get older and you are approaching the real world and you're going to have to do this on your own. So was it just a developmental thing, or did you find that your actual sort of perception of how this is workable for families changed over time?
It was both. It was both a developmental thing for my son, and it also was a developmental thing for myself. I was very frightened, thinking that, you know, one exposure and he could die in a school cafeteria. So it also was a learning curve for me to kind of not hold on so tightly. And that was only could happen when you have years of nothing happening, if you will.
Debbie, I appreciate your perspective. Thanks for sharing that. And I'm glad you and your son have negotiated this successfully and you know, relatively smoothly. Sharon Lee, I know that you sort of had a reaction, though, when Debbie said the bad stuff that was in the school lunches or what she didn't let her son eat. You want to respond to that? I could see your face change.
Well, I hope that I'm sure she's aware of the changes in the nutritional standards, and they're really encouraging the lower sugar and healthier options for school and a balanced diet. Schools are working really hard. There's all kinds of different food programs, opportunities. Farm to School is a great one that allows students to be exposed to a lot of variety of food colors and options. And schools, that brings up another opportunity to talk about a wellness policy. So the National Nutrition Program requires all schools to have a wellness policy, and it focuses primarily on physical activity and nutrition. But that's a place to address the nutrients and the options that the schools have and the opportunities to partner with others in the community to bring in more exciting opportunities around food.
So school lunches have changed over the years. And as you said, school administrators have to shift around with what their populations need. But there is a balance to strike, right? I mean, there are food allergies that can be very serious, life-threatening. Mm-hmm. There are intolerances that can make you feel, mm-hmm. you know, yep. less good. And then there are food preferences and mm-hmm. family preferences, and a school can't accommodate all of the preferences for every student. So where do schools and where should schools draw the line?
Well, that's a great place for the wellness policy development. A policy involves people in the community having input on this policy, and discussing these issues so that they can come up with their own alternatives that works for their school. They may be in a more urban setting, so a farm to school might not appeal to them, or they may have a farm next door that loves to bring in things. And so it's really a team sport. And to get back to the awareness of allergies, allergy awareness really is a team sport for the entire school. I like to say that it is championed or led by the school nurse to really understand what it means to have an allergy and what are the options and how can we work around that. That awareness makes it just easier for the high school student, that 15-year-old, to be able to attend many functions and not worry about for example, being on the bus to a sporting event and that everyone ate peanuts on the bus before they get on there. Well, peanut oil and then that contamination. The ambient, I'm not aware of ambient contamination per se, but for younger students who might be putting their hands in their mouth more often, that could, I suppose, be a potential exposure and leftover food on the bus. That's part of a policy or a protocol for how the schools manage allergy awareness.
What is the role of the school nurse or health professionals on campus at school in helping to negotiate these policies?
So being aware and having a really good relationship with community resources, but having a good relationship with the school administrator so that they can identify these issues right away and develop the systems where the right personnel have the right information for the right use at the right time. But a school nurse would, at the beginning of a school year, do a health appraisal for all of the students, and that's done through kind of a review of the forms that you all fill out at the beginning of the school year or when your student's enrolled in a new school. So looking at that health record, that health form that comes in, that's why it's so important for those forms to come in completed and let school nurses know what the allergies are or what the health conditions are and who the medical home is. So when you've identified a health issue that needs to be addressed, knowing how to work with the family and the medical provider helps the student get their needs met so that they can access their school.
Let's go to John, who's calling in from Colchester. Hi, John. Go right ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Welcome.
My question revolves around verification. When a parent says that their child has a given allergy, is it required that there's a doctor's verification? Because I had my child in a class where wheat was not allowed. And it was listed, I was told that there were four children with a wheat allergy, and I know scientifically that celiac disease is the only wheat allergy, and the odds of four kids having celiac, it's a very rare condition. And so I suspected and later verified it was just the parents saying, well, we kind of think they don't like wheat, and it doesn't agree with them.
And does that bother you? I mean, does that feel like it's parents taking advantage of a policy for their own preferences?
Limited on what they can feed their children, and it was really based on a parent's guess or whatever trend was happening at the time.
Yeah, thanks for your call. I appreciate that. Sharon Lee?
So that verification, it's actually part of the legislation that requires families to have a note from the doctor. That's a step towards using resources very wisely. If you are talking about a classroom that's free of wheat, that means a lot of people making significant changes. And so schools want to use their staffing and the personnel and their budget very wisely. So really being able to identify exactly who has an allergy, a life-threatening allergy. We're talking about life-threatening conditions, and that's why it's very important that those be confirmed. And they can, and as I said at the beginning of the program, that they're confirmed on a regular basis with the medical provider and in some cases really re-evaluated in case a student has maybe outgrown the allergy.
So technically, it is supposed to be accompanied by a doctor's note. It has to be documented and verified.
If a school is going to make a major accommodation or if other students are being asked to accommodate someone, you want to have a valid reason for that. And the standard of care that we use is through the national resources that I've mentioned.
Scott is on the line with us from Rutland. Hi, Scott. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, yeah. So I have a three-year-old with a severe anaphylactic allergy to wheat and eggs and some other moderate allergies aside from that. And, I mean, her mother and I have been practically petrified about the upcoming school and Head Start and whatnot. I know just from cooking for her how difficult it is to avoid these things. But I wanted to also refute what the caller from Colchester just said. Celiac disease isn't an allergy, and it's also not the only difficulty with wheat that people have. I mean, this is an anaphylactic allergy, which she was tested for on the RASP scale. Celiac is something completely different. And I know the gluten intolerance trends that have been going around are false, and they're not scientifically verified. There is a severe wheat allergy that does exist.
So, Scott, when you think you and your daughter's mother think about how to manage this and how to get into school, and, you know, you said you're practically petrified. Is that because you're just worried in general, or because you really don't think that the schools will be able to accommodate your daughter's needs in a safe way for her? I mean, where does your fear center?
Well, there is a general worry because wheat and eggs they're everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, a puff of flour from making, you know, the DIY Play-Doh could be it, you know. But I do also, just knowing from having to readjust how I cook, I mean, I was raised on Italian cooking, that it's really difficult to accommodate that kind of thing. I know traces of wheat and egg are all over the place, and I'm just, you know, I'm really afraid that it's a difficult thing to accommodate for when the allergy is so severe. Especially in the early years where she's not really able to self-regulate, you know, what she's taking in.
Scott, I really appreciate you calling. And, you know, I hear that concern and that fear. And certainly, you know, when your daughter has the potential to be exposed to something that can cause such a severe reaction and death in some cases. Sharon Lee, I mean, that is terrifying for parents who have a child with an allergy.
It's very scary. It's costly. It's a public health cost when people make errors. But that means that schools, for example, the school lunch programs, they have written criteria, guidelines for very specific handling of utensils, for example, peanuts. And in a facility where wheat is a life-threatening allergy, then there would need to be those protocols. And the industry has those protocols. There might be a little bit hard to find initially, but people do take that very, very seriously. So there are ways to accommodate that, and I would recommend maybe in checking with a parental support group maybe, but other websites in terms of what are the very specific kitchen protocols for handling products. If you're talking wheat, the example of a puff is very different than smelling peanut.
That's all fine and well if you can get your school to make sure that all of its procedures are good. But if you don't have the parents of, you know, the classmates mm-hmm. who are saying, yes, I get it. You know, if they're saying, oh, come on, you know, if my daughter has egg salad sandwich and mm-hmm. she's sitting at a table far away, it's not that big a deal for your daughter. Come on, I need to be able to make lunch and get out the door. You know, that could be a problem for Scott and his family. And that mm-hmm. fear can prevent a student from learning, can prevent a family from being comfortable. I mean, when we talk about barriers to learning, yep. that fear is one of them, right?
Mm-hmm. So going to the school website, if we're talking daycare, looking at the handbook, what are the protocols they have, being in contact with those personnel very early, right away, and staying with them, those of the parents that have called in who are wonderful advocates for their students, for their kids. And there's another example of a principal who I spoke with this very morning who said, oh, yes, and we have a parent who's been being in touch with us, and it's worked out really well. She knows what her child likes and can and can't have and how to manage it. She provides alternatives. She stays in touch with us. If I have a school-wide function and we need, for example, to bring in ice cream for everyone, I call that parent and she says, oh, well, we know this brand and this can be used and my son will like it.
That's a lot of pressure on parents who are juggling a lot of things to also then be an advocate for their mm-hmm. child at that degree and detail. You know, that's a lot of worry and stress that maybe some parents don't have the ability
So working with your school administrator or your school nurse is definitely the way to go. And that relationship is critical. School nurses know their families.
All right. And we'll put some resources as well up at vpr.net. You can click on Vermont Edition. Sharon Lee Treffrey is the school nurse consultant for the state of Vermont. Thanks very much for sharing your knowledge with us today.
You're very welcome.